Good evening, everybody. Let's see all those smiles. Yeah. It's lovely to be here in Kilkeele. It's a long time since I've been here, and I must admit, there's a balcony. Sorry, I wasn't trying to admit, there's a balcony. It was just that I just noticed there was a balcony. This is unbelievable, yeah, that all you people would actually come out. I just trust you're all coming out, not for this person here, but the person who is Jesus Christ tonight. But look, it's lovely to be here tonight. As I was driving down, you know, are yous all from Kilkeele, yeah? You all live in Kilkeele? Yeah? No. Where do you live then? Knows. Bessbrook. Right, okay. Bessbrook, that's a lovely place. Yeah. But Kilkeele's a lovely place to be because, you know, when you have to, you probably don't notice it. I was talking to Sam and to Christopher, and probably when you live here, you don't notice how blessed you are in such a beautiful place because it is such a beautiful place. And so to be invited down tonight was just lovely. And as Chris said, it was my own fault. I did go into your shop, you know. And Ozzy, where's Ozzy now? Oh, there's Ozzy now, yeah. I actually went to the guy's shop. You know, I worked for a company called Express Freight. Look, you'll have to forgive me because I just go away off some way, you know. But you'll get what I'm trying to say, okay? But we went into the shop, and Ozzy wasn't really there. I'd spoken to Chris, isn't that right? And when I was coming back, leaving the shop, then Ozzy arrived. Yeah, I love Ozzy. I love it, the fact it's Ozzy. You know, it's a great name, isn't it? You know, so Ozzy arrived. I haven't a clue who Ozzy was, like, you know, but he certainly let me know who he was as soon as he arrived. And I don't know where it came from, but out of the blue, he just brought this little testimony, a little Gideon's New Testament. And he said, Johnny, I need to give this to you. And it was just beautiful because since then, and that was a few years ago, since then, every night, I think about him and I take the little testament, I set it on my bed, and I kneel down beside my bed and I pray to my Father. So, Ozzy, thank you very much. And thank you very much for Christopher as well. He's, you know, I said not to say this to him, but you've brought up a really, really nice lad. So, look, it's so good to be here tonight. And, you know, I came down, I'm absolutely blown away because I saw my name on posters and stuff like that. You know, and you don't get your name on posters very, very often, so it's just so great. The worship team as well, you know, I just love your worship team. Good guitar player, great keyboard player as well. It was just lovely, but I'm saying that because I'm a worship leader. I'm a worship leader myself in a church called Jordan Victory Church, which is a very contemporary church up in Carrickfergus. Anybody ever heard of Jordan Victory Church? There you go. You're going to have to come to Carrickfergus someday and come up and see us. Some people, I bring some friends to our church, you know, because as I say, it's a very contemporary church. And they say to me, Johnny, what's your music like? I have to say just, it's rock and roll. Because it is, and that was lovely. You know, I heard you doing 10,000 Reasons a wee bit earlier as well. Yeah, we would do 10,000 Reasons. It's lovely. But the music is you know, it's rock and roll. And I've got a lead guitar player who plays, like, you know, just unbelievable, like a real lead guitar player. And I have a drummer who plays like Cozy Powell. You know, they're all unbelievably talented. I just get up and start to sing, you know, and they make me look really, really good. So, I'm here tonight, Christopher. Thank you very much for inviting me here. It's been lovely to be watching the Euros. Yeah, the Euros was good. Northern Ireland did all right, didn't they? Yeah, we did all right. And we did all right as well before when we were in the World Cup in 1982. And that's a wee bit sort of where I was. But as I said before, I never know what I'm going to say, but sure, let's just go from here. My name's Johnny Jemison, I'm a Christian. Lots of people think I'm going to say, my name's Johnny Jemison, and I'm a footballer. Well, I'm not really a footballer. If you saw me trying to play now in the garden with little kids, you know, I'm not very, very good at football now, but I used to play football. But I was a footballer, but I will always be a Christian. Proverbs 3, verse 5 and 6 says this, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him and He will direct your path." Does anybody read the Message? Not a one. The Message, I love to go to the Message every now and again. And it says this, "Trust God from the bottom of your heart. Don't try to figure out everything on your own. Listen to God's voice in everything you do. Everywhere you go, He's the one who will keep you on track." And I've got to say that my life has just been an amazing story, because He's given me a story. He has given me a stage, and He's given me things to say because of everything that He has done in my life. I was a young lad. I was ginger when I was growing up. You're probably saying, "He doesn't look ginger." But I was ginger. And so I was a young ginger lad growing up. You know, it was one of those when you were a bit of a ginger, you know, you got a wee bit of stick at school and stuff like that. But I was brought up in a place called Rathcoole. Rathcoole is in Newton Abbey. Has anybody ever heard of Rathcoole? Yeah! See, we're very, very well known. But I was brought up in Rathcoole. In the 60s and the 70s were difficult times growing up in Rathcoole. It became a dangerous place to live. And by the time, you know, we got out of the 60s and then into the 70s. And by that time, just going into the 70s, I started to go to secondary school. And that for me was really, really exciting. But when I went to secondary school, I realized that all I ever wanted to do was to... you see, they all say play football. No, to sing and dance. "I've got you under my skin. I've got you deep in the heart of me." I love football. But I just love singing and dancing. Or I always did. I was in every school play. I was in Oliver. "Come see to yourself at home." Come. I didn't even know I was going to do this, because I haven't done this in a long time. And then, of course, I was in Oklahoma. "There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright gold." My wife, actually, when it comes on television now, she will switch it off right away, because she knows that I would just say the whole thing and sing the whole thing the whole way through. All the guys as well, all our school teachers and stuff like that, you know, they were wanting to push me because I was a decent footballer at school. But I still wanted to be in a band. Or I still wanted to be on the stage. And music was so, so important to me. And that was when I was young. But looking back at those days in the end of the 70s, I realized too that things were strange. I always went to church. I'm sure a lot of us are like that. I'm sure our mums and dads send us out to church. And I wasn't any different. I got sent out to church by my parents. And I was in the Boys Brigade. So it was Boys Brigade, Chris, and then Big BB as well. Chris is now captain. No, that was all right. But I loved the Boys Brigade and youth fellowship in Rathcoole Presbyterian Church, because I went to Rathcoole Presbyterian Church as a little boy. Wasn't a Christian, but I went to that. But the weird thing, living in Rathcoole, we went to church at the weekends. We went to the church youth clubs and so on. But then, on the other side of things, we also would get involved with paramilitaries. And back in the 70s, it was one of those things where we were involved in the Ulster Volunteer Force, which was called the UVF. And in Rathcoole, I was involved with the UVF. And it was myself and my two mates, Winky and Geordie. Winky and Geordie and me were called the Three Musketeers, because we would go out there and we would mess up the police and we would mess up the army. If you're a police person or an army person tonight, my apologies, but that's what we did. We went out and messed them up a wee bit just to keep them off track. And we would do that. So, you know, one night we were in church, the next night we were in out doing naughty things, for want of a better term. The UVF had a younger sort of group, which was called the YCV, Young Citizens Volunteers. Heard the Young Citizens Volunteers? So we were part of the Young Citizens Volunteers. And I'm telling you that because we were about maybe 15 years of age, and we were called in to what was called the farm, which was the UVF club. And the three of us were pulled in and told to go upstairs in the club. Now, you've got to remember, we're 15, nearly going on 16. Myself, I'm at Tottenham Hotspur at the time, so I was a footballer. There's a Spurs fan in here, yeah? So your name is? Jackie. Does everybody know Jackie? Do you know he's a Tottenham Hotspur fan? Yeah, come on, Jackie. I'm the only one clapping now, so it must be just you and me, Jackie. So we were, you know, George, I was at Tottenham Hotspur. Jordy McKim, he was actually at Manchester United. This lad that I played football with, George McKim, was just an unbelievable footballer. But and Jimmy Nicol, does anybody remember Jimmy Nicol? Played for Northern Ireland, played for Manchester United. Yeah, Jimmy Nicol was just a year above us in the CMBB, the 7th Newton Abbey. And so we were called in, and we went up the stairs, and there was these three guys sitting behind. I'm sure, maybe, I don't know if anybody's gone through anything, I guess, but there was these three guys sitting in behind this desk. They had caps on. They had sunglasses on, even though it wasn't sunny. And they just looked at us, and we stood just like this. And they said, this was what they said. It makes me chuckle a wee bit as well. But they said, "We're not very happy with your footballing activity." And we just looked at each other like this. Because we didn't know what they meant. We weren't sure. I don't think I knew what activity meant. I was 15 and went to Rathcoole Secondary. Not Belfast High School, you know. So we just looked at each other. And so we went down then onto the main road out. And we just thought, well, what are we going to do? Well, George and Winky said, well, we can't go back to the football. We have to stop playing football. And George McKim was going to the top. There's no doubt about that. And I says, well, there's no way I'm doing that. You know, I'm going to Tottenham. I'm going to Tottenham Hotspur in the next couple of weeks. And I says, I have to go. So we made a decision. And the two lads, Winky and George, made their decision. And they made a decision to stop the football. This was George McKim, who's now a pastor, actually, in the People's Church in Mollusk, in Newton Abbey. And he actually made a decision to stop playing football. Now, here's the thing. I made a decision to stop going to the paramilitaries and be part of the paramilitaries. And I continued to go to Tottenham Hotspur. And within 6 months, George and Winky were both in Long Cash. George was in Long Cash because of armed robbery, and Winky was in Long Cash because he had murdered a young Catholic lad in Rathcoole. And so within 6 months, it can just show you sometimes how God moves in your life. But within 6 months, they had gone inside to Long Cash, and within 6 months, I had given my life to Jesus. Because I had made a decision, and I just knew, I didn't know this decision was a decision that God was wanting me to make at the time, but I just know that he was even in my life back then. So, I actually didn't think too much of it, but after about 6 months of the lads being in prison, and I had gone to visit them in prison as well, I ended up one night, I was with another friend. We were a bit worse for wear with a few drinks. And we woke up, this is how bad it was, we woke up on a verge just at the bottom of what was called the O'Neill Road. And I woke up, and my mate Bonzo, his name was, and who is now a born-again Christian, I kicked him about three or four times, and nothing happened. So I just left him. And I never knew, you know, you just never know what's going to happen to you. So I got the whole way home. I sneaked into the house because my mum and my dad would have killed me if they had found out that I was coming home drunk. And I got to my room. And it's amazing how God speaks into your life. Because I told you earlier before, some nights I was going to paramilitary organizations, and the next nights I was going to Rathcoole Presbyterian Church or to Boys Brigade. And I got home that night, got into my room, past my mum and dad so they couldn't find out. And I got into my room, and the next thing I know, I'm on my knees and I'm giving my life to Jesus. Just like that. God took me and he took my life and he took over my life. And he has been my king ever since. He's my king, but he's also my best friend. So, I still wanted to, you know, even though I've become a Christian, I still wanted to go and play football. And I always remember, in fact, the first time that after that, that I was going to White Hart Lane. White Hart Lane then, Jack, I was going to White Hart Lane, yeah. So, I got up one morning and I threw my bag I tell my mum this story all the time. And I threw my bag in the hall and I shouts up the stairs, "Hey mum, right, I'm going to play football." She says, "Who are you going to play football for?" I says, "Tottenham Hotspur." She says, "Where's that?" I said, "London." She says, "How are you getting there?" I says, "In an airplane." "Where are you getting the money?" "They sent me the money." "When are you coming home?" "I'm coming home on Friday." "All right then, cheerio." I say to my mum now, who just loves Jesus, as is going on, she is going on with God so, so well. And I say to my mum sometimes, "Do you know that was child abuse, mum? I was 15, you just sent me out on my own to get on a plane." And it was just the strangest thing, but that's what I did. And, you know, I was starting to really love the football, but I had given my life to him. And there was something happening to me that just had me thinking, you know, do I really, really want to play football? And, I made the decision actually, to not then work away. I realized that I was just going to come home, and I wanted to come home and just maybe get a job and that sort of thing. So I did come home, but then the weird thing was then Huddersfield Town came and made a wee bid for me, and I ended up going to Huddersfield Town. So I went to Huddersfield Town and spent two seasons at Huddersfield Town, and eventually, you know, at the age of 18, sort of 19, I got into the first team. I still wasn't comfortable, and I just wanted to come home. And I came home again. And my team in Northern Ireland, my favourite team in Northern Ireland, is Glentoran. Any cheers? Not a one. I want to say something. Any blue man here? Oh, there's at least one blue man. I may not get out. On my home, but so. You know, my team was Glentoran. I went to my first match in the 1966 Irish Cup final. The Glens beat the Blues 2-0. Who was that person who shouted to you? They beat the Glens 2-0, and I ended up falling in love with the Glens. But as I say, I came home. But as I was coming home, I was going to sign for Glentoran. And as I'm coming home, Roy Coyle. Anybody remember, know that name, Roy Coyle? Roy Coyle was waiting me for me coming off the boat. And he stopped my car and he said to me, "Johnny," he says, "I want you to sign for the Blues." I said, "Roy, I'm not signing for the Blues. You know, I'm a Glentoran supporter. You were my hero because Roy played for Glentoran in the 60s. And I says, "I'm signing for Glentoran." Cut a long story short, I signed for Linfield. Because they were giving me a lot of money as well. And so I signed for Linfield, played 2 years for Linfield, but just wasn't comfortable. And during that same time, myself and George McKim, you heard me say that name previously, George, he ended up in Longcash, is now out and on fire for Jesus, you know, on fire for Jesus. And he and I are out and we're doing a lot of singing. I play guitar. So your name is? Louise. Louise, you play guitar really well? No, I play really badly. Yeah. So, you know, George and I used to go out and we would go right around the country, but Roy Coyle wasn't very happy with that. So the thing was now, they could never understand it because I loved to play football, but I loved Jesus even more. Jesus was everything for me. I just wanted to do everything for him. And so I made a decision at 22 years of age that I was going to pack the game in and that would be it. And, so I went to see Roy Coyle and I told him I wasn't coming back. So that was it for me. As far as I was concerned, I was 22 years of age. I was stopping playing football. But God had a story for me. God had a plan for me. It wasn't my plan. It was his plan. Amen? It's his plan. Amen? Amen. Because in your life, it's not God. It's not your plan. It's God's plan. It's his plan. It's a plan that he has for you, not a plan that you make for yourself and think, well, maybe he will think it's okay. He has a plan for you. He has a plan for each and every one of us. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your path. He will, not you. And so he came back in to me and he said to me, "Johnny, there's a minister, the Reverend David Armstrong. Yeah, thank you very much, Stephen. And he was the chaplain at Glentoran. He asked me to come across to Glentoran. Of course, Glentoran was my team. And so he said, "Look, come across." So cut a long story short, I went across. I signed for Glentoran. And that was 22 years of age. And I just found myself in just a lovely place with regards to my football and being able to do all the things that I wanted to do for him. So that was so, so good. I was at Glentoran for 13 years and I was just in such a great place. And it's amazing what God does in your life. At the last, we were talking about the last home internationals a wee bit earlier on, and Northern Ireland hold the last home internationals, you know, and I was playing for Glentoran, was brought into the squad for the home international matches. And this is just, so, you know, I've gone from not wanting to play football, not wanting to do anything, and the next thing, I'm actually not only playing for Glentoran, I'm actually in the squad for Northern Ireland. And I started a new job in 1982. And it was for a company called TNT. Anybody know the company TNT? TNT. So they were that big distribution company. And I just started in a new job there. We're okay? So I just started in a new job there. And I just thought, this is going to be great. 82. Playing football for Glentoran, got a really good job. So the boss in there came through to me and he said to me, "Johnny, just let you know, we might need some couriers every now and again. We'll need a courier to go to maybe different places in Europe. Would you be up for doing a wee bit of courier work?" I says, "Yes, I would do a wee bit of courier work. No problem, Jim, that would be good." So that was fine. Now remember, this is my first day at TNT. Jim had got a telephone call. He comes running into the office. He said, "Johnny, you're going to Spain." I said to him, "Well, Jim, that was quick. I mean, you've only said to me 20 minutes ago that I could do this bit of career work, you know?" And he said, "No, no, no." He says, "You're going to Spain." I says, But yeah, that's what I'm saying. He says, no, to play football. I says, who am I going to Spain to play football? He says, Northern Ireland. You're going to play. So they're saying Northern Ireland even in those days as well. He says, Northern Ireland. He says, I've got to take you in the car. I said, what am I doing? He says, your wife, Carol, she's been on the phone as well. It's on the television. She found out on the television. She's ringing me as well to tell you, you're going to Spain. So I said, okay. So we got into the car. He took me to the IFA. I had to do a lot of signing. He then took me to get, measured for my Northern Ireland suit. And it's funny, actually, because I still have my Northern Ireland suit in the wardrobe. I tried it on a couple of weeks ago. I will never try it on again. Because it just doesn't fit me, you know. Nothing fits me anymore. But anyway, I had to get for that. And then I had to go, you know, I had to go and do lots of stuff. I had to go be interviewed and what have you. And I'm going to Spain to play football for Northern Ireland. So on the way home, I said, because I played for Glentoran, you know, it wasn't Manchester United. It wasn't Jack. It wasn't Tottenham Hotspur. Spurs. It was Glentoran. So I turned around to Jim, and he's taking me home. I said, Jim, do you have any money? He said, I have, Johnny. I've got some money. What do you need money for? I said, I need money because I don't have a pair of boots. So I'm in the Northern Ireland squad. I'm in the football squad, and I don't have a pair of boots. I get one pair of boots a season in playing Irish League football in the 80s, and that was all I got. So he took me down to SS Moores. We went in, and he bought me a pair of boots. And the following day, then we had to go to Brighton. So there we were. I'm now realizing this isn't a dream. This is real. I'm actually going to the 1982 World Cup finals. I still haven't played for Northern Ireland. I've been on the bench. I've got off the bench and I've got warmed up. But I never ever came onto the pitch. But I'm going. I'm in the squad of 24 to go to the World Cup finals. And away we went. But we had to go to a place called Brighton first. You all know Brighton? Yeah, not as good a seaside town as Kilkeel. We went to Brighton, and we had to go to Brighton for a few weeks to do a lot of training. And it was a wonderful time. Just before we went from Brighton then to the World Cup, then the wives all were allowed to come out. So my wife, Carol, lovely Presbyterian girl, she comes out, and we make a decision before I was going to go to Spain then that we would go and see a movie. Okay? This is really important because this is where God's starting to move in my life. And she says, like, we're going, Johnny, to watch a movie. And it's a movie called Chariots of Fire. Okay? And do you remember Chariots of Fire? Yeah, so, and what was the guy's name? Sorry? No, he was a guy who actually was a runner, and he was a missionary, and his name will come into me in a little minute. I should have written it down, but I haven't written it down. But it normally comes to me, but, you know, I'm now not of an age where I remember absolutely everything. But we go to see this movie, and Eric Little. Yes! Sorry, I was cheering myself there. But Eric Little. So Eric Little was what Chariots of Fire was about. I don't know if you remember. Eric Little went to the Germany Olympics to run the 100 meters. But when he was finishing at the Olympics, he was then going on to be a missionary in China. It turned out that the Olympic 100 meters was being run on the Sabbath, was being run on the Sunday. So Eric Little made a decision that he wasn't going to do that because he believed that God wanted him to make that rest on the Sabbath. So he said no to being there on the Sabbath. It's It's an amazing story because he eventually goes and he does the 400 meters. And he had never done the 400 meters before, but he goes and he does the 400 meters, wins the gold medal in the 400 meters. God is an amazing God. He had his hand in Eric's life. He then came and he went and he went to China. He died eventually in China. He never came back again. He just lived there and did God's work until he would pass away. And we're walking down the aisle after the movie. And my wife, Carol, turns around to me. And the lovely young Presbyterian girl that she was, she prophetically turned to me and she said to me, "Johnny, that's going to happen to you." And I was a wee bit, you know, I wasn't sure what to say to her. And I just said to her, "Well, that couldn't happen to me, Carl. Why not?" I says, "Because we don't play football on a Sunday." And we didn't. We didn't play football on a Sunday. And you never even thought about playing football on a Sunday. But this is, just shows you how prophetic her word to me actually was. So to cut a long story short, and we'll do our very best here, we ended up going to Spain. Of course, we did great. We played the first two games, and the first two games we got two draws, and we did really, really well. And then, of course, it seemed as if we were on our way out because we were playing Spain. Spain were a great side, and we were playing Spain in the next match, and we had to win that match. So it wasn't likely that we were going to win it. In fact, you know, the whole squad were fighting about what plane they were going to get the next day. And of course, then as the match actually went on a little bit, and the nicest guy in the world in football, called Mal Donaghy, gets sent off, and we've got 10 men, and we're playing Spain at Spain. Would you ever think? But of course, there's a big lad called Armstrong, with the help of someone else called Arganata. No, you don't remember that, do you? No. So Billy Hamilton crossed the ball. Arcanada came out and just went, "There you are, Jerry. Just you stick that in the goal somewhere." No, you don't remember it at all. Yeah, you remember, Stephen? Yeah, thank you very much. Stephen remembers. But we call Jerry Armstrong Arcanada Armstrong now, you see. So, and of course, we score and we win. We eventually win the match, which was incredible. So we actually got to the quarterfinals of the World Cup. Now, it was one of those, it was a little bit different because it continued to go into like a league thing as well, with three teams in the league rather than four. So anyway, that was fair enough. We played, the first match was against Austria, and then we were to play France in the second match. And it turns out, and this is where the interesting thing was, and you've got to remember that the last time I had this conversation was Carol trying to get out of the cinema. But the match against Spain was then to be played on the Sunday. And so that was fair enough. I never thought too much about it because I didn't even train on a Sunday. Billy Bingham knew that I didn't train on a Sunday. And so I decided, you know, that's okay. It'll not affect me in any shape or fashion. So the Sunday came for the game. And I'll tell you a little story just before I finish. But I got up on that Sunday morning that we were playing France, and there was a great squad. That Northern Ireland squad in '82 was a great squad. There were Catholics in the squad and there were Protestants in the squad, but they were all friends. But on Sundays, every one of the young Catholic lads, they all went to their church on a Sunday. No matter what, they would find a church and they would go. But I was the only one of the Protestant lads who actually would go to church. So there was this little minibus that sat outside the hotel, and the Protestant lads called it the Pope Mobile. Sorry about that, but it's part of the story. And of course, it was called the Pope Mobile because that little minibus took all our Catholic lads to the church on Sunday mornings. So I got up on the Sunday morning, and I'd been given directions to find a church. So I get to the directions, And I goes out. The lads have already gone off in the Pope Mobile to find their church, and that was fair enough. I couldn't find anything. The directions were really, really bad. Either the directions were bad or I was bad. One of the two. It might have been me. But eventually I see this church. Now, the church was quite a big church, and I thought, oh, I don't think the church that I'm trying to find is a big church. And as I get there, I walks up the steps. And as I'm walking up the steps, the doors open up. And who all come out? All the Catholic lads from the Northern Ireland squad came out. And they were shocked because they saw me coming up. And they called me Jemmy. So, you know, if you want to call me Jemmy afterwards, you can call me Jemmy. That's my nickname. But they said, Jemmy, what are you doing? And I says, I was steady crying. I said, I'm looking for my church. And they said, look, that's fine. Come with us, you know. So they just loved this. They carried me up. They put me in the Pope Mobile. And they took me back to the hotel. Of course, we got back to the hotel. And all the prods are having on their sunbeds, sunning themselves. And they're playing France in about 6 hours' time, you know. And so they took me out. And all the boys, you know, Martin O'Neill, Pat Jennings, Jerry Armstrong, you know, all those boys, they all lifted me out and they said, we've converted Jemmy. Converted Jemmy. So we went in. But when we went in for a little bit of something to eat. And Billy Bingham then was to name his team for that day. And this is probably the main thing. It just shows you God doesn't leave you out in a limb. But Billy Bingham named his team, and I was in it. Now, I hadn't been in any of the teams prior to that, but I was into this one. And as soon as he named it, I got up, and all the boys knew because they were so good to me. You know, they were so supportive with me as well about the stand that I would make even on training on Sundays. And so I goes up to Billy Bingham, and I said to Billy Bingham, look, Billy, you know that I won't be available. And it was a strange thing. I wasn't sure why he had done this. But I actually don't think that Billy had a say in it. This was something that God had planned for my life. And people will say to me today, because I got up out of my seat and I went to Billy Bingham and I said, look, Billy, my apologies. I hope I haven't messed you about, but you know that I would play. And he took that very well, I think. Or maybe he didn't. But the next thing, when he named then someone new into the squad, and all the lads were then round and talking to me about it. But it just shows you, what can actually happen. But someone said to me recently, a Christian person said to me recently, Johnny, I'm sure if you could do that again, you would change your mind. You would do it differently. I said, no. He says, why not? I says, because you know something? God had me prepared. If Carl hadn't have turned around to me after watching Chariots of Fire and said to me, Johnny, that's going to happen to you, I probably wouldn't have known what to do. But God had me prepared. And as soon as Billy Bingham named me in the squad for that day, I knew that I had something to do, which was to tell him that I wouldn't be playing. And wasn't my decision. This is what God wanted me to do, because there was more at the other end. It wasn't just that I was to do this and that was it. But God, it changed my life totally and amazingly. Of course, we went to the game, and we didn't actually win the match. We got beat, I think, 4-1 or something like that. Probably because I wasn't in there. I'm only joking, that's bad. But I came home. When we came home from the World Cup, it was quite amazing. Because the 1982, it was unbelievable. My mum and dad had been taken and wined and dined. And, different things in Newton Abbey Borough Council and so on. And it was just, we didn't realise how massive it had been then in the country. And in fact, somebody said to me, Johnny, you know, just letting you know, Brian Clough called you an idiot. And I said to him, well, if you're going to be called an idiot, you might as well be called an idiot by Brian Clough. Because he's an amazing manager, you know. But it was quite amazing. We got home. We went on an open-top bus to the city hall. And what amazed me was not just that what happened out in Spain was an amazing thing that we got to the quarterfinals and we did so well. But what amazed me was how much of an impact what I did actually had made on people back home. I got a lot of death threats. People wanted to kill. Honestly, you just have to say it. People wanted me to be killed because of what I did. And it was just, it was terribly extreme. But it still didn't take away the fact that it was what I believe God had planned for me to do. Because my life totally changed. It was quite amazing. Myself, George McKim, my friend, we went out there and, you know, I was inundated by people to come to their churches. So whilst there was lots of people wanting to kill me, there was lots of people out there wanting to see me alive and to see me living for Jesus. And what I love too about the fact that when I came home, God had a plan for me right through from when I gave my life to him, right through to what happened at the World Cup, right through, you know, when Carol made her prophetic message to me, there was a plan for me. And sometimes I'll now go through Belfast and people will say to me, they'll stop me in Belfast. My wife, my two girls won't go to Belfast with me anymore because they can't shop. They end up just talking in the streets. And people will stop me. And 6 months ago, someone stopped me in the street in Royal Avenue. And they said, we're a bit nervous, but they said, I'm Johnny. I says, yes. He says, well, my name is so-and-so, and you came to my church in 1986. And my husband, we'd never go to church. But because it was you, it was in East Belfast, and because it was you, he came. When you give your testimony, and you sang, and when he got home that night, he asked me to pray with him, and he gave his life to Jesus. And he passed away just last year. And she says, I just want to thank you for what you allow God to do in your life. Isn't that amazing? Because, you know, and so many people will come to me now and tell me that, you know, Johnny, I gave my life because you came to our church. But God had that all planned. And I went through all of that. Doing what happened in the World Cup wasn't just, just something that was just done. It was a plan by God. It was special for my life. And it's exactly what he wanted me to do. I believe that I am here tonight because of what happened there. God had me. God has all of this planned. I don't know where I'm going to be next year, but God has all of this planned. I do a lot of work with wee Stewardy Elliott. Yeah, he's been here, hasn't he? Yeah, great lad. And with Roy Walker and with Stevie Baxter from Crusaders. And we do lots and lots of stuff together. And we're just loving it. There's so many. Alfie Stewart as well, who played for Portadown and Glentoran, Northern Ireland. And, there's more and more. At one stage, I think I was the only Christian playing in the Irish League. At my time, but now there's many, many Christians coming through and playing. So, you know, all I want to say is that, you know, God has a plan for each and every one of us when we give our lives to him. It's not a plan that we need it's just a plan that we need to be there and just answer him when he says it, but it's a plan that he gives us. He has a plan for our lives, and that's the plan that he gave to me. And I think tonight I'm here because of what I truly believe I'm here because of what Jesus did in 1982 in my life. So look, if you've come here tonight and you don't know him, I would just say to you, look, let's come, speak to some of us tonight and just say, look, I want to give my life to God and allow him to make a plan for my life and allow him to make a stage for me. I don't know, just a fly came there and just said hello. So look, thank you very much for bringing me here. I've probably overstayed my welcome a little, and so I just pray that God will have spoken to your heart tonight, Stephen. Thank you.